Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hello, I'm Susan Violante. I'm your host for today. I'm really excited to be speaking on the phone with Mark Siriana, author of The Suffering of Innocence. But before we start, let's learn a little bit more about Mark. Mark Siriana holds a BA from Long Island University and a Juris Doctor from Hofstra University's School of Law. He is a world-renowned business development consultant in writing. Siriana has practiced the martial arts for over 25 years and earned a second dan under the supervision of Grandmaster Yeon Han Park in Levittown, New York. He has been active in practicing and teaching meditation for 10 years. He has published numerous books, ebooks, and audiobooks, and on a variety of subjects. He is currently the lead correspondent for Taekwondo Times, an international print publication. Siriana is married to Soraya Rose and has four sons, Daniel, Demetrius, Joseph, and Sebastian. For more information on Mark Siriana and his books, visit his website at www.marksiriana.com, and that is marksiriognis.com. Hi, Mark. How are you doing today?
Very well, Susan. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm very excited of having you here because you and I have common in our backgrounds, common things that you have no idea about, and we'll come up to that in a little bit later. But before we begin, can you please tell our audience a little bit more about yourself and background and how you got into writing?
Oh, sure. So I have been, for the most part, I like to think of myself as a teacher. I taught college for 10 years. I taught in areas that were in and around things that I had done, the practice of law, real estate, insurance, things of that nature. And I've moved into the world of doing other things, expanding my horizon. I am a lead journalist for the largest martial arts magazine in the world, Taekwondo Times, and I am a business development coach, and I help with branding and identity and helping to be able to express their vision to the public. Much of these things led into my writing, technical writing, writing for things that I was working on that led to college courses. I then wrote some of the textbooks for some of the college courses that I taught, largely because I was trying to bring affordable textbooks to the students that I dealt with. In some of the subject matter, the textbooks were several hundred dollars, and I needed to present the material, and I felt that those were just not reasonable things to ask people to spend, and I felt I could write something that would be hopefully as meaningful to them but more cost-effective. And that's where much of my original writing came from.
That's awesome.
As I've gotten a little bit, yes, and I've sort of moved into the fiction area only more recently.
And you know what? I've noticed that through your background, and I am a business analyst too, so I was able to work on not coaching per se, but you know, starting businesses from ground up in three countries. I always wanted to get into the technical writing end of it, and it just wouldn't happen for me. it didn't matter how hard I tried to get into the system and procedures and write, you know, procedures on everything and do the organization of it. It wouldn't happen for me. It was more in the analysis of what there was there that I was involved and in try to design a better way. But I noticed that you were always able to put those two passions, all the passions that you have into your writing as well, you know, with the business end of it and the technical writing, self-help, and Taekwondo. martial arts. What would you tell somebody who's trying to live their passions? Let's say somebody that was like me, that was trying to put the things that I love into my job and it wouldn't happen. What advice could you give people like that?
I really think that, you know, much of this comes from being able to have the ability and the desire to do a couple of things to overcome your fears. And I think that for me, fiction writing was a perfect example of that, because for me, the technical writing always came a little bit easier, partially because my background and my education and my training were more focused on tech writing. So I tried to take my knowledge and be able to do that. And for me, fiction writing was always the challenge because it put me in a different place. But I think, you know, meeting those challenges head on is one of the ways, if you have the desire to do it, that we can overcome the obstacles in our path. And sometimes it's really, really liberating. For me, it was really, really liberating. And I think that you have to in yourself and you have to have confidence in your abilities. And I think people's passion is one of the great compensating factors in the world. We can make up for a lot of other areas where we might otherwise be weak. Mm-hmm. Our passion, because our passion will drive us to learn more. Our passion will help us to drive us to be able to absorb more, and our passion will help us to become more creative in the way that we communicate, so that we have the ability to convey to people our thoughts and our messages. And I think, you know, sort of beings that thrive on energy, people feel your passion, and when people know you're passionate about something, they feel passionate about it and they feel excited about it. And I think that, you know, there's a lot to be said for that.
I agree with you. I remember, moving from one country to another, I have to adapt and many times change areas in what I was working in. And here in the U.S., the opportunities that presented for me were mostly accounting. And I didn't like accounting. But I was a very good job costing accounting, but I didn't really enjoy it. And I remember I was two different persons. When I was doing the business analysis and compared to the accounting. But I've always managed to have a hobby that I was passionate about, like writing. And then I ended up publishing articles here and there until I went into publishing books and doing publicity. And this is like a total whole new person here. You know, once you find your purpose and your passion and you're able to do that for a living, and it doesn't mean that you're making tons of money or you're becoming famous, or it just matters that you're able to maintain yourself so that you can do it. It just totally changes your frame of thought and your way of being. How much influence in your personal life did this satisfaction have in your life?
I couldn't agree with you more. And for me, I was in fields that I had studied for my entire life and that I had made very, adequate living at. Mm-hmm. However, it wasn't fulfilling to me in the way that life has in more recent years. And being able to combine things that are important to me, for me, the martial arts, doing the journalism for the martial arts, being able to be connected to a community that I respond to, being able to find the time to be creative and to write and to be able to share my vision and the stories that hopefully touch people is meaningful. And it's afforded me something as a surplus bonus, which is the ability to be able to be happier and be able to spend time with my family, which is my other passion, and be able to be hopefully a better father, a better partner, better in all those areas of my life. So I do agree with you. I think that, you know, there's certainly something to be said about we all need to make a living. We all need to worry about the economics. But to some degree, if you're able to focus on something that is important to you, something that you enjoy, good things will happen in the end, and that's my belief. Sometimes I think that people don't experience it because they give up too soon. And that's not a knock on them, because sometimes they have no choice. There's economic necessities or economic realities. I've been fortunate in the sense that, for me, I've been able to balance all of those things. And like you said, it doesn't necessarily mean that people are walking up to your front door with buckets of gold. That doesn't necessarily have to be as important. The other things that I've received, being able to share my passions and be able to do things that I love, are so much more rewarding. You know, being able to spend time with my kids is probably the most rewarding of all.
I agree. And talking about your kids, I think that it's amazing that you have such a gap in ages. You're a father of a 3-year-old, and yet you have a son in Germany in the military. So how is that going for you?
That's wonderful. And, you know, for me, my many aspects of life are sort of divided. There's a sort of dividing line where I've sort of been given a second chance to start over in a lot of ways. And for me, having two older boys that I have a wonderful relationship with. My son, as you said, is stationed in the military in for the U.S. in Germany, and I'm very, very proud of him. But then having young boys again, I have two sons that are 4 and 3. All my sons are very, very close, and I have the ability now to be able to hopefully, you know, be more confident, be more learned, and more experienced in my parenting, so that I have the ability to take all the things that I learned the first around and apply them in an even healthier way to my boys. But it's the four of them that really, drives me to do everything that I do. And that's why I always make it to mention one way or another in anything that I write, because I really do feel like to some degree I'm writing for all of them.
Yeah. Any plan of writing any children books for the young ones?
You know, I have a book that I wrote, which was not geared towards children per se. It was called The Journey of Praying Frog. It was a self-exploration book. It's used by a number of Taekwondo schools as part of their reading curriculum. But I've had opportunities where people have expressed the desire to do an illustrated version of that for children, because they felt that the message is very applicable to young people. So that is something that I've actually been in discussions about, and I'm very excited about. I've never thought of myself as being somebody who writes for children, in the sense that, I think that that's a very unique gift to be able to connect to children in the written and visual way. But this particular writing that I have, people have seemed to feel that there is a real message there for children. Mm-hmm. And the key for me is to hook up with somebody who is more gifted in the artistic aspects of it, to be able to make something that is physically and artistically appealing for children.
Welcome back to Incest Group Live. Today I'm talking with Mark Sirianas, author of The Suffering of Innocence. Stay tuned, because we are going to continue this fun and inspirational conversation with Mark about being a Hitler orphan descendant, his life passions, writing about grievance, being a father, and so much more. But in the meantime, you can check out his books at www.marksirianas.com, and that is MarkSirianas.com. I think it's awesome that you have the opportunity to pursue something like that, having young children. When I started writing a picture book that I published recently, I mean, my girls are in their 20s, so I don't have them any little kids around anymore. But when I started doing that story, which I published in a publication in California in the 1996, more or less, that was my dream, to do the illustrations myself, because at some point I was an artist in Venezuela. And it never happened until now. Now is the time that I have more time and that I could do it. I cannot imagine what it would be like to sit with your kid and read your own book to them. So
it sounds wonderful. It sounds like a wonderful experience, and hopefully you and hopefully I will be there at some point. I got to get this project done before my kids get too old to want to sit with me and read a book. So
yeah,
that's my goal.
hurry up, because it goes fast. I wanted to ask you something. I noticed that you have a book called Hitler's Orphan. And is that the name? Let me double check. I think it's that's the
Hitler's Orphan, Dmitri of Calabria.
Yeah, and you actually based that in the execution of your grandparents by the Nazis, and that's something that I'm a World War II nut because both of my parents grew up in World War II, and my father in Libya. And my mom in Italy, in Rome and Sardinia, and
wow.
So I have the other view of what happened. And the one thing that I discovered was that there were things that were happening outside Italy by Mussolini. Like my grandmother had to hide her nanny, that was a Jewish 16-year-old girl, for 2 years, and I'd never in Libya. You know, and I didn't know that
wow.
those things were happening in Libya. So I'm wondering what happened to your grandparents. You're originally Greek, am I correct?
That's correct. That's correct. My family's from Greece,
mm-hmm.
and my father was orphaned at 3 years old.
Wow.
And I went back to uncover, because he didn't have direct knowledge of the things that had occurred,
mm-hmm.
and I went back and had discovered that the village where he was born had been the subject in World War II to one of the most violent and dramatic displays by the Nazi regime when they invaded Greece. In order to be able to quell the resistance, they went into certain villages and they executed all of the living adults.
Wow.
My father's village was one of those villages. His parents were killed during that time, and he was orphaned. And he ended up coming to the United States later on, but throughout the end of World War II and later on, during the very, very depressed times in Greece, it was dramatically impacted by this really cruel and horrific Holocaust, really, that occurred in Greece. And, in fact, that book was just added to the Holocaust Museum at Queens College. The director had called me and said, you know, I feel that the book has enough significant properties in telling an unusual story that most people don't consider, most people don't really fully understand it. As you indicated, there's a lot of World War II stories that aren't front and center. People don't always know the atrocities that occurred in Greece during World War II. And he said, I really would like to add it to the collection. So it's now a permanent part of the collection of the Holocaust Museum at Queens College, which is really something I was extremely humbled and honored by.
I think that's awesome. I grew up with my parents, and I knew a little bit about the background history of my mom because my side of the family was in Venezuela where I grew up, but I didn't know anything about my father's family, and they don't talk about it. It wasn't until I became a mom that I wanted to connect with my dad, and I started doing research, and I got 5 tapes from him, and that's when I really got to know my dad, which I put in a book later on. But it totally changed not only my relationship with my father and my mom to understand. It's different when you hear it. I guess if being in a recording thing, he felt safe enough to let it all out. And that was more like a therapy for PTSD for him. But it really affected my life as well, and how I am as a mother and how I am with my friends. It gave me a total new perspective about life, just learning that I didn't really know my dad. I don't know how to explain it. How did that affect you?
I understand completely, and I feel the same way, because for me, I always have had a good relationship with my dad, and I'm blessed that that's around, but he doesn't really, you know, if you sort of met my dad, he'll talk to you about his life. You would think his life started in his 20s or in his 30s. He doesn't talk about the events of his childhood. Some of it probably is that he doesn't remember, and some of it's probably just too painful.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to understand the adversity that he and other people generation and of his area of the world had to overcome, and to see the bravery, really, that they exhibited in being able to sustain themselves and then come to the United States and try to pursue truly the American way that it is, you know, right out of the storybook, and then be able to try to build on that dream, always trying, never letting the past be a hindrance, but always be a motivation to do better for his children and his grandchildren. It certainly changes the way that you relate to your family and your family story, and also to your heritage. It makes me, you know, certainly have a greater understanding and respect of the people and the lineage, you know, that I come from, the culture that I come from.
Yeah. It also helped me go through life better, you know, when I was facing, like, you know, like, I don't know, some financial problem. I would just remember my grandmother not being able to get food on the table for their kids for years. Because,
sure.
of the, you know, and everything seems so petty compared to what they went through.
Right. It's relative. It's all relative. I feel the same way. You know, I think about the hardships that my dad had to endure. And then you sit there and you go, well, in comparison, some of the things that I complain about are really not such a big deal, like you said. And I think food is a big issue. You know, when I grew up in a house that my dad never wasted a piece of bread, because
yeah.
for him, we would go 2 or 3 days, and if you got bread, that was really, you know, that was something to be thankful for. So you know, we have so much choice, abundance here in terms of, well, do I want to get this tonight, or do I want to get that tonight, or do I want to barbecue, and you know, that's not really my dad's perspective, and I agree with you. Sometimes it helped to humble me and to sort of set me back into perspective about, hey, you know, have the kind of choices that we have sometimes is, you know, really a symbol of the fact that we have lives and we're very fortunate.
Yeah. You have work on your fiction books, and it makes sense now to me why you chose to write about grievance and in the suffering of innocence. But why don't you tell our audience of what made you choose to write a fiction book about that?
Well, for me, I have moved into writing to the fiction genre because I sort of, the way that I've expressed it is, you know, in my younger days and writing technically, it was safe for me. It was very, very safe for me to write that way because I felt like I took things that I know. I basically created transcripts of oral lessons or oral teachings that I had done, and I connected to a very specific audience that had a desire to learn specific things from me. I always desired to write the fiction, but I never felt safe enough to. You, in my opinion, you need to go to a very vulnerable place, and you need to be able to connect vulnerably with yourself and with your audience. And I don't think I had the emotional maturity and confidence to do that as a younger person. At this point of my life, I feel more able to connect myself and more able to be connected to that. And I look around and I see stories that touch me, and I see them in a way that I feel that I want to be able to retell them. And this story was very, very personal for me. And one of the things that I've talked about in the past is that I sat for a long time and watched the trial of Etan Patz in New York, who's a boy who disappeared many years ago in New York and became essentially the poster child for my children here on Martin, because he disappeared. And there was a trial in New York, and 35 years gone by, and I was watching his parents sit in the courtroom and have to relive this tragedy, and I just was struck and compelled by this notion that how could these people face every day? What must it be like for them to know that they're going to get up in the morning and everything in their life is going to be framed by a tragedy, a terrible tragedy, among the greatest tragedies that can you know, strike somebody. And in fleshing that out, and I think the contrast of me now being the father of young children, joyous children, and children that bring me so much joy, be able to think about that, and how does that impact a family? How does that impact your relationship with each other, and how does it impact on a very important relationship, and family's relationships with God and their higher power. You know, when I have my own understanding of who God is, people may have different perspectives on that, but to some degree, there's still a relationship.
Yeah.
And it led me to tell the story, and you know, there's always different ways to tell a story. I could have written a story that was a documentary that was, you know, sort of covering the trial of Eitan Peetz, the Eitan Peetz killer. But, you know, that wasn't the way that I felt that I connected people best. I felt through the development of characters and through the development of emotion and through the connection of asking questions that I think are really on everybody's mind, the story sort of told itself for me or through me.
Yeah, and I'm glad that we're talking about this because in our previous visit for the written interview, you mentioned to my question that why is it that innocent suffer that you were not the best qualified person to answer to that. But what I'm hearing now is it's truly we discover answers to all of deep questions by hearing the opinions of others that somehow tell a story about it. You know what I mean? And I feel that that's what the suffering of innocence does for the audience. It gives a perspective of, not I want to say an explanation, but it puts the reader in that position and they can come up with their own answers.
I agree with you. And I think, you know, probably could have selected or, you know, I could have written a contrast and selected three families and maybe all three of them. There would have been some similarities in the way that they approached the tragedy of the book, but there may have been some things that were the same, and I think it's going to be unique to each family, and I think part of it relates to where do you come from? You know,
mm-hmm.
family bond before the tragedy, how do people react to each other before the tragedy, what are people's relationship with, you know, their faith before the tragedy and afterwards, and a lot of those things will combine to create the answer. But I think that they're universal questions. They're questions that people think about, whether it occurs in your own life or whether or not, you know, why is it that we're so touched when we, you know, pick up a newspaper and see, you know, something tragic on the front page or if we're flipping through the news at night? Because there is an ability as human beings and as the humanitarians to relate to the universal feeling that, you know, the world can be a really sad place at times. I think it's a wonderful place, but there can be much sadness in the world.
Yeah.
And trying to balance those and trying to reconcile those things are probably intellectually one of the toughest things that people have to deal with in their entire lives.
And it's interesting that sometimes you have people that take things in one way and you have people that take things in a different way. So it has to do the, even if you come from the same background, I realized that my father being so strict when I was young with me and my siblings was not a matter. I attribute it to a matter of culture, and it wasn't culture. It was
right.
Actually PTSD because he lost so many people. I mean, he would have a schoolmate today, and then the next day the school was bombed, and the schoolmate was gone. So he was very strict. He didn't want us to go anywhere, and by me learning that everything is so temporary through the research I did on his life, I actually thought of it the different way. I'm like, well, if everything is temporary, then my girls need to be what the most that they can be and get the most of the experience. So by the time they were teens, we have already swum with dolphins, seen whales. You know what I mean? I mean,
I think you have a very important point, which is that absolutely the same set of circumstances, the same set of facts, the same basic foundation can be received, encoded, and reacted to by different people for very different reasons. And some of it is cultural, and some of it is personal, and some of it is psychological, and some of it is sociological. But you could really end up, you know, I think anybody who were to tell you that they could take a set of facts and predict with 100% certainty how individuals will react is not necessarily being sincere, because I think, you know, a lot of factors will play into people's response to those things.
I love talking to you, Mark. This has been an awesome conversation, and I want, before we're running out of time, But before we go, I want to make sure people know how to get your book. And I know that your website is
I can spell it. That's fine.
Okay.
www.markzirianis.com. That's MarkZirianis.com.
Thank you so much.
No problem. And the book is available in every major bookseller, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, online, and in bookstores. So it has a wide the publisher, Revival Ways of Glory, has done a really good job of promoting the book and making sure that it is easy to for consumers to find.
You know, you have a very interesting opportunity that you took full advantage of, which was to, like you said, start over by having small kids later on as a parent. And your life represents so much, I want to see harmony on things that you were passionate about, that you were able to utilize in order to just make a living and better your life as well, economically and spiritually. With all the stuff that you have learned throughout your life, what is that advice that you will give new writers that are coming up and wondering what to write about or how to make things work and keep writing, et cetera?
Excellent question. You know, I had a young boy that I teach Taekwondo to who came to me the other day and said, I really wanted to write, but I could never write the way that you write. And I laughed because I always feared writing, and I never considered myself to be a good writer. But my advice to him was a couple of things. And number one is you have to be a student. And one of the things that somebody said to me a long time ago is that, you know, the difference between somebody who can tell a great story and somebody who can't is the starting place, which is you have to have the ability to see the great story in the things that happen. So my advice to anybody is to really be alert to the world, read the newspaper, keep your eyes open to when you're sitting on the train, rather than being, you know, maybe engaged in a game on your phone or something, look around. There's everybody on that train has a story to tell. And the second component of this is to start writing early and to write. And to write every day if you can write. And you don't necessarily have to write fiction stories. You don't necessarily have to write technical manuals. You can write diaries and you can write journals. But writing gets better from more writing. The more you write, the more comfortable you'll feel, the more fluid you'll feel, and the better you'll be able to express yourself. And that is me. I probably would have had a 25-year head start if I had really started, you know, if somebody had given me this advice, you know, years ago, and I had started just writing and journaling on a daily basis. And I think that's really, really important. And from all of that, something will come. Something will come. You'll write something and you'll say, this is pretty good. Maybe somebody, I should share this with somebody. And that's really what I believe.
Well said. And I agree with you 100%. If you never try it, then the wall gets higher, you know. But if you,
absolutely.
Yeah, even if you try it for yourself, I wrote for myself for many years before I decided to put something out there. And it's just something. It's like math. If you practice, then you get better at math. It's the same with writer. If you practice, you get better at writing. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
No question about it. Very few people are born with the ability and the gift to be able to simply put pen to paper and create the great masterpiece. It takes time and it takes work. And it takes, you know, somebody once said to me, there's no good writing, there's only good rewriting. And I think that's very, very, very important.
I agree. I agree 100%. Listeners, this has been a wonderful talk with Mark Zirianna, and you can check out the website at markzirianna.com, and that is Mark, M-A-R-C, Z as in sorrow, I-R-O-G-I-A-N-N-I-S.com. Please feel free to check his website. His books are awesome. My husband is also a fan of him with his other book, Panina's Dead. And, you know, I wish we would have more time to talk about that one, but in the meantime, The Suffering of Innocence is his. Is that your latest book? It is your latest book. Am I correct?
Yes, that's my latest book.
Yeah, so check it out, and it's available everywhere. And you can check out Amazon and click at the author a little link, and you'll find a bunch of other books there, too. Mark, thank you so much for being here. It was awesome talking to you.
Thank you, Susan. It was a real pleasure. Real pleasure.
And to you, our audience, thank you again. I can't tell you how much we appreciate you. Thank you again for being with us. And until next time.